We're in Des Moines this week for World Food Prize activities. Part of that was a gathering of the group Truth About Trade and Technology, and they sponsored a Global Farmer Roundtable here at the World Food Prize. They also presented their annual Kleckner Award at this event, and this year's winner was Ian Piggott, who is a farmer from England, and we're going to visit with Ian here for a bit. Ian, the presentation of that award this year, recognizing the work that you've done in bridging the gap with consumers. First of all, let's talk about your farming operation, just what you do.
I farm about 20 miles north of London. I'm a fourth-generation farmer on our home farm where we grow wheat, oilseed rape, oats, and spring barley for malting. And, we've been farming in the area apparently since about 1400s.
That's a long time to have that farm in the same family.
It is. Actually, although I studied agriculture at university, I didn't work in farming to start with. I traded commodities in London for about 7 or 8 years, and that probably was the thing that gave me an appreciation of how people from outside of farming were viewing our industry.
So farming that close to a major metropolitan area, I'm sure presents some challenges, some opportunities as well.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, every day we do have challenges. You know, we have a lot of, in the UK, we have a lot of environmental schemes, and I have 13% of my farm devoted to those, so we have a lot of habitat-created areas around the edge of fields, which, the people that live near to my farm think that they're there for them, and, every day we'll have lots of people walking dogs or walking around these margins that are specifically for different types of wildflower or butterfly or bird, and that's a challenge. You know, you have to find a way of asking them politely, you know, not to walk there. But also it does create opportunities. You know, our business is diversified to take account of where we live.
How have you diversified?
It's nothing particularly dynamic, because all we've done is we've made use of existing farm buildings. Historically, we're in a very traditional farmstead. And my grandfather had cattle, my father had pigs, and I had some sheep before I saw the light, and we've converted those buildings into high-end offices. So we have about 40 high-end offices on the farm.
So talk about what you've done to bridge that gap with consumers. Sounds like you've kind of got several different things going.
Yeah, it's something that since I returned to the family business, I felt very passionately that the industry hadn't necessarily represented itself very well in the UK. It's perhaps important at this point to say that in the UK we're about 5 generations removed from the land, so people are very distant from where their food comes from, more so than perhaps even in the US. And not only would you see in textbooks, in schools, was there outdated information, but also in the media. Every story that you ever heard about a farmer was always a bad news story. And, you know, there would be misrepresentations about the way we were looking after our land, that we were applying chemicals that, you know, hadn't been used in agriculture in the UK since the 50s, or that we were tearing out hedgerows, which hadn't happened for 40 years. In fact, you know, I'd planted over 20 miles of hedgerow on our farm. And so it was about trying to find a way of reconnecting our audience, be it the consumer that buys the groceries or school children, and I felt the best way to do that was through education in schools as a first step.
Okay, I also noticed here that you helped implement an Open Farm Sunday program. Tell us about that.
Okay, so in 2002 I was awarded a scholarship, what's called a Nuffield Farming Scholarship, where I wanted to go and see how the rest of the world were incorporating agriculture within the curriculum. And I traveled to a number of countries in Europe. I also came across here to the US. I traveled broadly from Kansas, New York, San Francisco, Colorado, seeing how you were doing it here in the US and also in Canada. But one thing I came across which resonated with me was a small group of farmers in Denmark. I think there's seven or eight dairy farmers on the outskirts of the capital, Copenhagen. And they were opening up their dairy farms on a day in that they call Green Sunday in September. And I could see that the opportunity for us to open a network of farms up and down the UK would be a really good way of dispelling some of those myths, being very transparent about what we're doing on our farm, showing people that we were, you know, creating lots of habitats and growing really good quality food, always with the best interests of the ground and the farm at heart. And so I started something called Open Farm Sunday, And annually, we started off a pilot in 2006, and we had about 250 farms opening up for a free experience, so people could just turn up, and it didn't matter if you had a 50-acre farm or if you had a 50,000-acre farm. It was up to you as the farmer how you wanted to put on the day. It didn't matter if you were a sheep farmer, chicken farmer, beef, cereals, you know, and you do it your way. And it was incredibly popular in year one. So it was funny because year two we said, well, you know, let's get 500 farms in year two and then we'll try and get to 1,000. In year two we had about 450 farms open. But what we found is because of the popularity that we had actually, we needed about 4,000 farmers to come and help on those 450 farms. And this was the bit that I didn't understand when I started it. Was actually it wasn't about the farm, it was about the farmer. And the most important thing about Open Farm Sunday for those visitors was for them to come and meet a farmer. And often, you know, I think most farmers that would listen to your show would assume that the biggest disconnection exists between the town and the farm. Well, in the UK we were finding because of that disconnect, actually there would be people who live next door to the farm that didn't understand why we were doing what we were doing at that time. They wouldn't even know what some of the crops were that we grew. And so there was as much support for Open Farm Sunday from our neighbours as there were in towns and villages. And so up until this year, I think we've welcomed just over 1.5 million people onto UK farms for Open Farm Sunday.
That's a great program. Also noted here that you have worked hard to get more young people interested in agricultural careers, farming.
Yeah. And when you say agricultural careers, that's absolutely right. So if you mention this to most people outside of agriculture, they assume, when you talk about farming, they assume that you're either going to be milking a cow or you're going to be driving a tractor. And actually, our industry is so much broader than that. But in the UK, and I think here too, is that you know, there's been a lack of people coming into the industry. And we find ourselves at a crisis point in the UK. We think we need somewhere, broadly speaking, between 60 and 80,000 people in the next 10 years to come into the industry. And so we need to change the way that we're going about that. I think as a whole, the industry has regarded it as someone else's problem. They've always assumed that these people will just appear. And so proactively, through this initiative that I've helped start up called Bright Crop, what we're doing is we're trying to attract the best and the brightest. So, you know, a lot of schools and careers advisors have seen agriculture as a place for people that perhaps find academia difficult. And our industry, we need everybody. We need those same graduates that go to Harvard and Yale as we do to the ones that actually won't go to university, you know, because there are so many different roles. And that is our appeal, I think, as an industry. We can say, you know, agriculture isn't about just sitting on a tractor seat or milking that cow. It could be about being a geneticist, being an engineer, being a lawyer, an accountant, a trader, being in charge of logistics. There are so many different opportunities for people. And, you know, I'm biased, but it's a fantastic industry to work in. And we've done a lot of research with Bright Crop, and some of the findings were quite staggering. We found that a lot of children were deciding before the age of 13 that they didn't want to go into agriculture. Now, that's not them saying they don't like the idea of farming. It's that, you know, they've been turned off agriculture either by their parents or their peers. You know, the anecdotal stories that I could go on about parents saying you're too good for farming. You know, it's pretty soul destroying as a farmer to think that that's the message that they're being told. And so we need to start young. We need to start changing these children's opinions when they're through primary school, and then reinforcing the positive messages that we have to offer as they go through the decisions in secondary school before they decide where they're going to study.
Biotechnology, of course, a big topic of discussion here, and I assume that that's something you're not able to access being part of the EU.
Still a big topic in the UK. It's a big topic, yeah. And we're seeing a change in attitude, actually. I think that our current government has, you know, making noises to say that they know that we need to change our approach to biotech. And hopefully in the not too distant future, it's something that will happen. And I farm, where I farm in my nearby town is Harpenden. We actually have a plant research institute, one of the oldest in the UK. It'd be 200 years old this year, and we have the oldest wheat trial in the world there, called Rothamsted. And so they actually carried out a GM trial last year on aphid resistant wheat, and they're doing another one this year on a plant called camelina. So slowly there's we're trying to change opinions, and it's tricky because the media by and large is pretty anti the idea of GMs, and I know it's a challenge that you've had to deal with here, and you have your labeling issues going on in various states. So, you know, I don't think it's going to be straightforward, but as a farmer, I know that it's not going to be the silver bullet. You know, it's just going to be an extra tool in the box to help us grow the best quality food that we can.
Now, is that a policy dictated by the UK by the European Union?
No, that would be by the European Union.